Hi folks, Shahan here, and today I'm here to tell you about From the Library of Jürgen Leitner, an upcoming The Magnus Archives novel, releasing this October 27th. From the Library of Jürgen Leitner is the first in a multi-book deal between Rusty Quill and Random House Worlds. The book explores an infamous organization from the Magnusverse for the first time, the perilous private library of the enigmatic collector Jürgen Leitner, where occult books are guarded and researched at a fatal cost. This novel, which is set before the events in the podcast, is written by the creator of the Magnus Archives, Jonathan Sims, and Nebula Award-winning author Premi Muhammad. In the winding, perilous halls of Jürgen Leitner's library, you never know what you'll find. A starving cookbook, a cloth-bound hardback that compels you to dig, dig, dig. These books are more than simply unnerving. They're deadly. But the library keeps their dangers in check and their would-be readers safe, or so Leitner claims. For two of his employees, the risks are worth it. But will Hugh Franklin and Sebastian Everett find a way out, or will the library consume them before it's too late? Step into a library where the lights are low and the pages bite. You can pre-order your copy of From the Library of Jürgen Leitner now at www.rustyquill.com/novel, or go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi there, Jonathan Sims here, and before today's episode, I wanted to tell you about From the Library of Jürgen Leitner, an upcoming The Magnus Archives prequel novel available for pre-order right now at www.rustyquill.com/novel. Return to the world of The Magnus Archives in From the Library of Jürgen Leitner, an official prequel novel written by Nebula, World Fantasy and Aurora Award-winning author Premi Muhammad, with the help of yours truly. From the Library of Jürgen Leitner explores an infamous organization from the Magnusverse for the first time, the perilous private library of the enigmatic collector Jürgen Leitner. From the Library of Jürgen Leitner will be published on October the 27th, 2026, and is available for pre-order now as a hardback, audiobook, and ebook. Visit www.rustyquill.com/novel for more information. That's rustyquill.com/novel, or click the link in the show notes of this episode.
The Uses of Analog by Aaron Swartz. Mike had worked at Video Help Stop VHS Rental and Repair for as long as he could remember. And it was an alright job, mostly. Then again, how was he to know? He'd never really done anything else. He'd heard that most people hated their jobs, so being bored most days seemed like it probably wasn't too bad in comparison. It was the same routine day after day. Unlock the shutter and doors, send out any notices for tapes that were either about to be due or well past due, and wait. That was most of the job. Waiting. And on the rare occasion the dented bell above the door would signal a new arrival, Mike's heart would judder subtly in his chest as he waited to see which kind of visitor they were. Of the few patrons VHS could claim, there were two main types. Most were older. The kind of people who not only still had VCRs, but still used them. If it wasn't the old-timers, then the bell most often heralded a couple of 20-somethings who would come stumbling in through the door, rifle through the collection while holding up this or that box to marvel at with their friends, before the inevitable question of, "How's a place like this even stay in business anymore, man?" would get thrown out like an afterthought. Mike would shrug, mumble something about a dying art form, and the 20-somethings would leave without renting anything. Both the older and younger customers were the first type. It was the second type of customer that meant Mike's heart could never rest easy at the sound of the bell. They came once a month, maybe, always right around closing time, and they always waited until the store was empty before marching right up to the desk like they owned the place. Maybe they did. Mike really wasn't sure. They didn't like it when you looked them in the eye, though. So when they rushed the counter like a storm front, Mike pitched his eyes down and waited to hear what they wanted. It was always the same thing. "I need an edit made," they'd say. Mike would nod. What kind and how much?" he'd ask. The answer varied somewhat. Most often they'd say, "I need a few minutes cut out," or sometimes, I need 30 seconds spliced in, or I need a full wipe. The specifics didn't matter too much. Mike's next question was always, do you know the terms? He'd get a nod, or a grunt, or a hoarse yes, or a swear that stood in for agreement, and he would nod, finish closing up the store, and lead the customer into the back, and through there, into the very back. The back room of VHS was mostly normal. The very back room behind the false wall was not. Mike didn't know what most of the equipment did, and that was mostly what the room was filled with. Choked clots of cables, ticking 8-tracks spinning like tiny moons, lights that blinked on and off like stars, and sometimes didn't blink at all. It all fed into the chair, and that was where Mike would always gesture for the customer to take a seat. Once, one of the more nervous customers had joked that the chair was straight out of the Matrix. Mike had stared at the man's shoes. He didn't like to be looked at in the eye, and then continued prepping the equipment he knew how to use. The customer had sat down eventually. Mike never had to worry about getting them into the chair. Just the other parts. Once they were seated, Mike would ask the next question. Do you have the payment? He'd ask, and they'd hand him money. He counted it out of habit, not necessity. No one had ever tried to shortchange him, and he never needed to explain the rate. $500 per minute. When the money was counted, he would set it aside, and then he would look the customer in the eyes for the first and only time during their visit. And the other half? He would ask. The answer varied too. My 6th birthday party, one would say. The day my son was born, one would be another's offer. First time I got laid. Seeing boy live in 92. The first time I killed someone. Cheap offerings usually, especially compared to what they wanted done, but always good enough. No one tried to shortchange him with that half of the payment either. He wasn't entirely certain why. Maybe it was because he looked them in the eye. He would let his eyes fall, noticing passively the way the customer's body relaxed as he did, and move back to the equipment. It was tricky to work properly, but after all this time, Mike had the knack for it, and could cut, splice, insert, or rewrite the relevant segments as requested. He could even snip out the pain of the procedure, which, judging from the way most of them screamed, must have been significant. After the requested work was done, he'd load in a blank tape and collect their payment, labelling it carefully with the events it contained while the customer rebooted one system at a time, adding the new tape to the bank of others against the right wall of the very back room. He'd give the customer however much time they needed to remember the necessities of breathing, blinking, walking and all the rest, and escort them out of the very back room, through the back room, into the door, where they would hurry off into the night. They always seemed keen to get going after their business with him was concluded, which Mike didn't mind in the slightest. And then Mike would go home, which was the grey apartment above the video store, and the only other place he spent his time. And he'd sleep and dream of a shut door and a silent bell, and smile. Or sometimes he'd dream of a set of tapes, 3 in a wall of 100, and frown. And then he'd open the shop again the next day anyway. It was an alright job. The worst days were when Fuchsia came in. That wasn't her name, but it was the colour she always wore somewhere. Sometimes a tie, sometimes a belt, sometimes a bracelet, sometimes makeup, sometimes streaked in her hair. So that was what she was in Mike's mind. Fuchsia. Fuchsia never came in for herself. Fuchsia came in to place orders and to make sure they got filled to the letter. Fuchsia expected results immediately and didn't like waiting. Fuchsia made sure Mike understood how little she liked waiting. Mike wasn't sure why Fuchsia was so scared of him, but he didn't worry about it too much. He just got on with things and did his job as he was told. like the times when Fuchsia would tell him to go in the back while she went and got his patient. She said patient instead of customer, which Mike didn't like. But he'd go into the very back room and begin setting up the equipment anyway, and sooner or later, three or four big men would drag the customer into the room, shove them into the chair, and tighten the manacles built into the arms of the bulky contraption until they cut into the customer's thin wrists. Fuchsia was always very insistent that he'd do his job without complaint, even though he never complained or did anything but his job. So long as they paid, he would fill the brief just as they asked. He didn't like doing complete reformats, but they were part of the job, so he did them. He just didn't look those customers in the eyes, and didn't label the tapes he made out of them. Sometimes, in the long, quiet spaces where Mike sat at the counter and hoped the bell wouldn't ring, his mind would wander. He'd think about the rows and rows of tapes in the very back room labelled in his careful handwriting. He'd think about the three tapes labelled Mike Pendleton in the same careful handwriting as all the rest. The first labelled years 1 to 10. The second, years 11 to 16. The third, years 17 to 24. He'd think about watching them. He wouldn't watch them. Mike had worked at Video Help Stop VHS Rental and Repair for as long as he could remember, and it was an alright job, mostly. Then again, how was he to know? He'd never done anything else.
The Magnus Protocol is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 international license. To subscribe, view associated materials, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at The Rusty Quill, visit us on Facebook, or email us via mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening.
Deine Lieblingsplaylist macht dir richtig gute Laune? Deine neue Brille von Fielmann auch. Denn bei uns bekommst du immer den besten Preis. Wirklich, immer. Warum wir uns da so sicher sind? Weil wir bei Fielmann eine Garantie dafür haben. Siehst du dieselbe Brille später irgendwo günstiger, hast du die Wahl. Wir unterbieten den Preis oder du bekommst dein Geld zurück. Und das bis zu 6 Wochen nach Kauf. Finde deine Brille zum besten Preis jetzt online oder buche gleich deinen kostenlosen Sehtest auf fielmann.de. Deine Brille? Fielmann.
Es ist dunkel um sie herum. Sie kennt die Umrisse des Raums, in dem sie eingesperrt ist, obwohl sie ihn nie gesehen hat. Sie zählt die Minuten, seit sich die Tür zuletzt geöffnet hat, und sie weiß, dass sie nicht mehr viele davon hat. Wir sind Saskia und
Chinoa, und wenn ihr einen echten Kriminalfall hören wollt, der ebenso spannend klingt, dann seid ihr bei unserer Live-Tour unseres Podcasts Überdosis Crime genau richtig.
Während ihr mit eurem Lieblingsgetränk oder euren Snacks auf den Stühlen im Publikum sitzt, erzählen wir euch einen der spannendsten Fälle, die wir je recherchiert haben.
Wir wühlen uns mit euch durch Beweise, Tatabläufe und Verdächtigungen und finden gemeinsam die Auflösung zu dem Kriminalfall, der uns im Nachhinein nicht loslassen wird.
Also packt eure Friends oder Lieblingsperson ein und kommt am 19.09.2026 nach Berlin oder am 27.09.2026 nach Hamburg. Alle Infos findet ihr auch unter myticket.de/überdosis-crime-tickets.
Mit UE übrigens. Und ansonsten auch in all unseren Episodenbeschreibungen überall, wo es den Podcast Überdosis Crime gibt. Wir freuen uns auf euch.
Hi. Alex here, founder and CEO of Rusty Quill Limited. In case you haven't heard, there is now a Magnus Archives novel. The Library of Jürgen Leitner is set in the world of the Magnus Archives and written by Nebula Award-winning author Premi Mohammed with our very own Jonathan Sims. The story follows Hugh, a university dropout desperate to find somewhere to belong, and his new job at an esoteric library. The books he must investigate for the enigmatic Jürgen Leitner are not normal, because the library is not a vault, sealed and silent, but a hive. Alive, buzzing, and ready to sting. The Library of Jürgen Leitner releases October 27th, 2026, but you can pre-order it right now in the US and UK from your local bookshop or by using the link in the episode description. If you live outside of the UK or US, you may be able to make an international order for this first publication, but it depends on individual retailers' shipping policies.